The following podcast is a glimpse into the life of Ecclesia Houston. We pray it is a blessing as you seek to follow Jesus, the liberating King, and live in his kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven.
My name is Wayne. I get to be one of the pastors here at Ecclesia. My wife, Emily, and I, we're coming up on 20 years of marriage. And some of you, that's awesome. I can also tell some of you are trying to do the math. Don't worry, we got married when we were 16. So I'm kidding. So I just turned 44 actually. So, but 20 years, we've got three kids. My oldest, Moses, he's about to be 12. My daughter, Aiden, is about to be 10. And then we've got a one-year-old, about 1.5-year-old Shepherd who's running around. So yes, you like the math, we have quite the spread. And it does mean I spend most of my time chasing a toddler these days, which is super fun. But you know, in this season, and I got here this morning and I met with the team and we do this thing. You love these things. We did the icebreaker, right? You look forward to it in every meeting, I know. But one of the activities was just to like go through and name, when you think about 2024, what are the things that you're grateful for? Which is very timely, actually. And when it got to me, the thing I was just overwhelmed, the thing I had to say was like, I'm just grateful for health, right? And some of you know that like the last year and a half, 2023, 2024, has been quite a season for me and my family. Some of you don't, but when we found out we were going to have Shepherd, and the doctors came to my wife and said, okay, so you're considered advanced maternal age, which every time I'm like, guys, there's gotta be a better way to say that, you know? But it turned out to be a gift because the doctors wanted to be super careful and super cautious and they wanted to check everything out. And so in the course of her pregnancy, we actually discovered that my wife had a cancerous tumor in her lung. And so a few months after he was born, right before Thanksgiving in 2023, she went in to have surgery and have the tumor removed. And so 2024 then obviously was spent in a lot of recovery, a lot of follow-up doctor's appointments and more scans and more tests and more waiting to hear what's the doctor gonna say, what's the prognosis. And so when I say like, I'm grateful for health, I mean it. And it's one of those things like you don't take it for granted. And part of why I think it's important to start there is we're in that place where if somebody hasn't asked you yet, they're probably gonna ask you soon, right? How many of you have already been asked, what is your New Year's resolution? I got some hands. How many of you are the person asking, what's your New Year's resolution? So, we love you, we're grateful for you. But there, you know, there is something important about this exercise and there's something about this season that opens us up to it to look back and say, what was the last year and what do I want the next year to be like? And it's fun to actually type some of this stuff into ChatGPT too as well. And I learned a lot about New Year's resolutions in just a matter of seconds, right? Did you know there's this thing called Quitter's Day? Right? Quitter's Day is the second Friday in January. And it is a thing, right? January 12th this year. And it's about 66 to 70% of people who made New Year's resolutions. Like that's the day they're like, nope, I'm out. And what's interesting is they say about 11 or 12% of people who make a New Year's resolution, they actually follow through with it, right? So like, hey, let's not be too bad. Like for the 10% of you, well done, right? You know, but here's what I think that teaches us, right? There's nothing magical in the day, clearly, right? There's nothing magical about saying, oh, on January 1st, 2025, it's gonna be a new year. It's gonna be a new me. Here we go, right? Nothing magical about that. But at the same time, we have an immense capacity to be able to choose our path and to be able to choose what kind of life we want to live. And the day that we get to choose that is always this day. And so the question and the thing I want to go into today is what would it look like for us to choose a path today that opened us up into a future that God is inviting us into? And here's what I think is true. The most common New Year's resolutions, they typically have something to do with like, I wanna lose weight, I wanna get more in shape, I wanna save more money, I wanna read that certain amount of books or those kinds of things. I think at the end of those, what we're trying to get is we believe that if I can get this thing, in the end, I'll be more loved. And so what I wanna talk about today is what would it look like for us to actually take an intentional path to say, I'm gonna develop my soul and develop my character to become the kind of person who takes in and receives more love and extends more love more readily. So I want to go to a passage in the scriptures, and this is probably the most famous story in the whole Bible. You could have never gone to church in your whole life, have never picked up on a Bible, and I guarantee you've heard a reference to this story. And all of you college football fans, like I'm saying it now, right? In the course of the college football playoff, there's gonna be some announcer or some analyst who's gonna make a David and Goliath reference. Like, it's coming, just ready, just wait, you know? It's the ultimate underdog story, right? And this is a story of a battle. This is a story of war, which sounds weird if we're saying, hey, we're gonna go have a conversation about what does it look like to become a person who's more loving, right? But here's what I know, right? And there's violence in the scriptures, right? There's violence, especially in the Old Testament. It's not because God is violent. It's because we're violent. It's because we are a people who are bent towards violence. The miracle here is that God still works with us and that God still chooses us and walks alongside us, right? But what you're gonna see here is you're gonna see a person who becomes famous for their love and their passion for God. And who becomes famous because while he was king, the people around him thrived. And what you're gonna see is what kind of path did he choose? What kind of life did he carve out for himself and how did he get there? So we'll pick up in 1 Samuel chapter 17, and this is all about David. And it says, David was the son of Jesse, an Ephrathite from Bethlehem in Judah, who had 8 sons. So it tells you that David had 7 brothers. And it says, At this time, Jesse was already an old man. And Jesse's 3 oldest sons, Eliab the firstborn, Abinadab the second, and Shammah the third, had gone with Saul to the battlefield. David was the youngest son, and while the 3 oldest went with Saul, he went back and forth between Saul's battle and his father's sheep in Bethlehem, taking provisions to the troops and bringing word from the front line. So kind of what you're seeing here is you've got a dad, he's got sons who've been sent off to war, and rightfully so, he's a little anxious, right? And so what he's doing is he's trying to figure out, how do I get tabs without Twitter, without any, you know, without the World Wide Web? How do I know how this is going? And then maybe I'll send some gifts and provisions so that like the commander likes us and doesn't put them on the front lines. Like, he's very strategic, right? This is a good dad. So that's what's going on. And it says, for 40 days, this Philistine giant, Goliath of Gath, stepped forward, challenging the men of Israel every morning and evening. But no one was brave enough to accept the challenge, right? And really, no one can blame them. What you look at before this is it tells us about Goliath, and it tells us that he's over 9 feet tall. Massive dude. Just super strong, super mean. Like, he is ready to go. And what's happening here is, I mean, war is expensive, okay? It doesn't matter when it happens, like, it's always costly. But particularly in this kind of society and this kind of thing, like, you gotta feed all the animals, you gotta feed all the soldiers, you gotta do all that kind of stuff. But then the other side is when you have a major loss of human life and you need a lot of hands to work the fields in order to have food, like, it's costly on that end too. So their solution to this is like, we're gonna pick the best soldier we have, and we're gonna challenge your best soldier that you have, and whoever wins, then you win the war. That way, like, we don't have to have the whole loss. And Goliath is the guy that you want, right? He's over 9 feet tall. Like, if you get into hand-to-hand combat with this guy, this is not the guy you wanna see coming down a dark alley, right? He's the guy that everybody thinks is gonna win. So let's go back. And it says, Jesse said to his son David, take 3/5 of a bushel of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers in the camp, and also take these 10 blocks of cheese to the commander of their company. See how your brothers are doing and bring me some word from them. Saul, your brothers, and all the men of Israel are arrayed in the Valley of Elah fighting, and that's kind of a loose word at this point, right? They're really just kind of standing around taunting each other, fighting against the Philistines. It says, David rose early the next morning, left the sheep in the care of another, took the provisions, and obeyed Jesse's instructions. Now, part of what you need to understand here is that David chose the kind of life, he chose the humble path. That David understood that what I need is actually to be a humble person. And he was willing to submit to the authorities in his life. And what's interesting is that in this point in the story, David's already had an experience where this guy, this prophet named Samuel, came to his house, came to his whole family and said, I'm here to anoint the next king of Israel. And out of all 8 of his brothers, David was the one that was picked. So if there's anybody who should have a chip on their shoulder and should have a sense of like, I don't have to do that. It's David, right? Dad, I don't have to do what you tell me. I don't have to clean up my room. I don't have to do any of that. Like that's, but David gets up and says, no, like I'm actually gonna submit. And part of what it means to be the kind of person who can be trusted is to be the kind of person who is actually submit and is willing to live under authority. And it goes on. It says, David reached the camp just as the army was lining up and shouting its war cries. Both Israel and the Philistines prepared to fight against each other. It says, David left the provisions with the person in charge of baggage. He ran to the front lines and shoved his way through the soldiers to greet his brothers. As David talked with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, emerged again and shouted his challenge to the men of Israel. This time, young David heard his words. And when they saw Goliath, all the Israelites were frightened and retreated from him, right? We'll come back to this, but already you can kind of get a sense of David sees the world differently than those around him. And so the soldiers said, have you seen this man step forward? He's trying to taunt Israel. Our king will reward the man who kills him with wealth, a royal marriage, and freedom for his entire family from taxation and obligations in Israel, right? That sounds like a good deal. Tax day's coming up. Like, how do I get out of that, right? And so David, asking those around him, says, what is the reward for removing this insult from Israel by killing this man? And again, you can see how he sees the world differently. No circumcised, uncircumcised Philistine can get away with taunting the armies of the living God. Like he's already seeing something different. But the soldiers say, you've heard what will be given to the man who kills him. We were just talking about it. And so watch this. It says, David's oldest brother, Eliab, overheard this conversation and became angry with David. And Eliab said, why have you come down here? And listen how he talks to him. Who is watching your tiny flock in the wilderness? I'm your brother and I know you. You're arrogant and your heart is evil. You've come to watch the battle as if it were just entertainment. And here's what's interesting to hear to me. Those words are like poison. And you have voices in your life, whether it's in your head or it's voices from somebody else that have said, maybe not those things, but they've said similar things. They tell you how you're not enough, how you're not smart enough, you're not attractive enough, you're not talented enough. They tell you all the reasons why you're not enough. But what you see in David is he's built up a level of resiliency against it. And it's actually the humility in him that does this. Watch how he responds. He says, what have I done now? I was just asking a question. And David ignored him and asked another soldier the same question. And when the people gave him the same answer. And so what David does is when those voices come at him and they start to attack, they start to tell him all the things that he's not, he just brushes it off and starts asking other questions. He actually engages with a level of curiosity. Because here's something that I know to be true. The moment that I stop being curious is the moment I stop being humble. And if you want an added antidote for those voices that show up in your life and pop up in your life and tell you all the things you're not, you can hit them back with a level of curiosity. Because when those voices tell you you can't do it, what if you were able to respond back with, What am I capable of? Because at this point, no one's killed that giant, right? But David's actually able to say like, no, like what am I capable of? What can God do through me? And see, this is where like I think humility comes into play. Because humility is not thinking little of ourselves or belittling or demeaning ourselves. Humility is actually thinking less about ourselves. Humility is actually when we begin to value and think about and place in importance the needs and desires of those around us. And we begin to pursue those even if it costs us. And there's a reason that in the scriptures it says that the most important commandment is to love God, and then the second one is to love your neighbor as yourself. And the truth is that we can't love God if we secretly hate ourselves. And we can't love others if we secretly hate something about us. And so humility actually creates this interesting tension point where we become the people who understand and realize that God has uniquely made and crafted us, that he knit us in our mother's womb, that he's given us unique gifts and talents and abilities. And at the same time, I'm not God. And I still have things to learn. I still have places and spaces where I need to be curious. So as we talk about those voices that come in, I know you've got them. I was in a therapy session a few weeks ago, and we got to a really, really deep place. And she asked me a question. And as soon as she asked it, it was like I was transported back to 6-year-old kindergarten Wayne standing on the playground at Barton Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Like, I mean, if we had Google Maps up, I could like pinpoint, I could tell you this is where I was standing, right at the edge of the swing set. And what happened in that moment is there was a little girl and she said the words, "You are ugly." And man, that like totally went straight into my soul. And I'm in therapy for it, right? Like, you know, and let's not like, she's a little girl. She didn't know, like she didn't know what she's doing. Had no idea, right? And that person who said, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." They were wrong, like totally wrong. We're all in therapy over all the things that people have said. But this is part of why this is so important, is humility puts us in the place where we remember what actually God says about us and what God invites us into. And it gives us that ability to respond with curiosity. I was recently reading a book on communication, and I think it sums up this idea of holding these two points in tension. I didn't use this at 9, so, but he got to a point where he was talking about what does it look like for us to find our voice when we're communicating and talking with people? And this is what it says. It says, "To find your authentic voice is to accept the fact that when you see yourself, you may not fully like yourself. In the face of this, you have to learn how to love yourself. You can love yourself and still not like everything about you. What is important is that you're willing to change as a human being," right? So let's see, what would it look like for us to be the people who choose, like David, to walk that path of humility, who are willing to look ourselves in the mirror and see everything about us and still choose to love because that's who God is and that God loves us. And God says and declares his love for us. But it's not just about humility. It goes on. And it says, "When news of David's valiant words reached the king, Saul sent for David. And so David said to Saul, 'Don't let anyone be frightened because of that man. I am your servant, and I will go and fight him.'" This is bonkers, right? And Saul actually says it. He goes on. He says, "Don't be ridiculous. You can't fight the Philistine. You're only a youth. And he has been a warrior since his childhood. You lack age and experience." Again, those voices coming in. Well, look at what David says. He says, "I work as a shepherd for my father. Whenever a lion or a bear has come and attacked one of my lambs, I have gone after it and struck it down to rescue the lamb from the predator's mouth. If it turned to attack me, I would take it by the chin, beat it, and kill it." Now here's what's interesting. The shepherd's job was not like high on the priority list of like jobs, careers you're looking for. There's a reason that David was the youngest and he was the one sent out to the shepherd's flock, right? What you might not know and what's not necessarily told in that passage is that often in Bedouin societies, it's the youngest, but it's often girls who end up being the shepherds, right? And if you can imagine like when his brother is saying like, "Who's tending to your little flock," right? There's probably some condescension in there coming too of like, "Why don't you go back and do the little girl's job, David," right? Which, by the way, what would this do for your view of God to think of the Lord as my shepherd if it's like a 9-year-old girl? like my daughter who does cartwheels just because, you know? Like, we can gauge a day with my daughter on if it's a good day. Like, she did more than 20 cartwheels. Like, if she did less than 20, it's like, man, what happened, right? Like, she just does, you know? What would it do for our view of God if we saw God like that, like leading us by the hand to green pasture? That's a side note. That was totally, that has nothing to do with this sermon. But all that to say, David doesn't look at it and say, hey, this job is beneath me. But what he actually sees is this thing that I'm faithful to is what I need in order to be prepared and be ready to face this giant. None of us, and I don't think Jesse would have looked at him and said like, hey, what's going on? Why'd you lose that lamb? You know, when the bear comes, I think he would have been like, yeah, you can let it pass, you know? But what David has an internal sense of is I said I was gonna care for these sheep. And so he is willing to keep his own word. He's willing to be faithful in small things. And because of that, he actually was able to lay the groundwork to be ready for the opposition when it came. I'm curious for you, I'm curious for me, where are the spaces and places where we need to keep our word? Where are the spaces and places where we need to keep our word to ourselves? And being faithful to that and keeping our word doesn't mean that you get it 100% of the time. You're gonna mess up, you're gonna fail, you're gonna falter. You're gonna tell somebody, I'll be there at 10 o'clock. And then you're gonna get on I-10 and like, who knows what they're doing, right? Traffic happens, and then all of a sudden you're not gonna be there. But part of it, what it means to be faithful is to own the promise that you made and said, hey, I said I'd be there at 10, I'm not gonna make it there, but here's when I think I'll be there, right? I had to do this today. Like I actually, when I was texting, going back, I had to text somebody and say, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot about this little detail. Maybe that's the place where we start to be faithful, is to actually say those words, I'm sorry. And then we make the steps and changes that we need in order to keep our word. So he says, I have killed both a lion and a bear, and as your servant, I will kill this uncircumcised Philistine too, since he has dared to taunt the armies of the living God. The eternal one who saved me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will save me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul says, go then, and may the eternal one be with you. Now watch how this unfolds though. So it goes on and it says, that Saul outfitted David in his king, in the king's own armor, a bronze helmet to protect his head and a coat of mail to protect his chest. David strapped on Saul's sword outside the armor and then discovered he could not move because he was not used to the restrictions of the weighty armor, right? You guys have seen that movie, A Christmas Story, and like Ralphie's little brother and like mom suits him up in the Christmas thing and he's just like, Ralphie, right? He can't like, that's kind of how I picture David in this moment. It's like, I can't do it. I can't move. I'm not used to these things. I can't even walk. So, but part of what you see here, this is bonkers too. No one in their right mind in this day and age would say like, you know what? A sword is kind of overrated. Like, I don't need it in this battle. Like, just, we could do away with that. But what you see is David has a totally different perspective. And the reason that David has a totally different perspective is he's cultivated a practice of gratitude. Again and again and again in the Psalms, when you turn to them, so many of those Psalms are penned by his hand. And it's not that David just sticks his head in the sand and ignores all the bad things that are going on. Again and again, when he's in a place, he's in a cave, he's hiding, somebody, he's on the run, somebody's coming to kill him. And he's talking about it and saying, where are you, God? But then at the end, he turns to these kinds of words where it says in Psalm 69, it says, the name of the true God will be my song, an uplifting tune of praise and thanksgiving. My praise will please the eternal more than if I were to sacrifice an ox or the finest bull. Those who humbly serve will see and rejoice. All you seekers after God will revive your souls. The eternal listens to the prayers of the poor and has regard for his people held in bondage, right? What David has done again and again and again is he has cultivated this practice of gratitude that even in the moments where it's dark and it's bleak, he's able and willing to find the moments and recognize that God has still provided everything that he needs and that God is still with him, even when it feels like it's not. And because David has that perspective, he's able to say, well, I don't need the armor, right? How many of us have this kind of sense that, oh, I'll be grateful, or I'll be more loving, or I'll be more kind once I get that thing, right? Once I get that car, once I get that house, once I get that job, once I, whatever that thing is, like we say, like, that's the thing I need. But David has a perspective of like, hey, I actually don't need that because God has already provided everything I need. So look at what David does, right? He removed every bit of Saul's armor. He would fight the Philistine as he had fought those lions and bears. He took his staff in his hand and went to the stream to choose 5 smooth stones, which he kept in a pouch in his shepherd's bag, right? What David does is he goes down to the river and actually sees that there, God has been working for literally thousands of years to smooth out and make some stones and give David everything he needed in order to fight this giant. And because he was faithful in the small moments, right, he had picked up a skill of using a sling and a stone because he had kept his word. And for us, what would it look like for us to be those people who cultivate a similar practice of gratitude? So about 12 years ago, I found myself in a season where we just went through a lot of transition. We moved to a new city, and because we moved to a new city, then we also had to get a new house, and then I had to get a new job. And then about a month after all of that, my oldest son, Moses, was born. So I had a new baby, right? If you look at like list of top 5 things that cause stress in your life, I had 4 of the top 5. And it's like, what's going on with me? I don't know what's wrong with me, you know? So I found myself in therapy for the first time. And I'm so grateful for my therapist in that season. And she recommended a book for me. And the book was called 1,000 Gifts by Ann Voskamp. And I can't recommend this book highly enough. This book totally changed my life. And it's really her story and her journey of a farmer's wife in Kansas, right? In like as middle of the road, mundane, basic as you can think, right? Like not on some beach in California or someplace beautiful, just like a farm in Kansas. It was her journey of naming and discovering 1,000 things that she could be grateful for. And she's very gifted at writing and all that. But what I found is that this practice of taking the time to actually pause and name the things that I'm grateful for, it totally changed me. It opened me up in ways that I didn't know or understand. It changed the way I viewed the world. It changed the way I viewed my wife, my kids, myself, everything in my life. And when I think back to that season 12 years ago, and doing that work to develop that practice of what does it look like to name the things I'm grateful for, I can see a direct correlation to the last year and a half that we went through, totally different. And it's not like it was easy, right? It's not like it made things easier. What it did is it made me more aware of God's presence and God's grace and God's provision in the hard times and in those moments. And so part of what we're talking about is what does it look like to do the work now so that when life starts lifing, you can still cling to and recognize God's voice, God's presence, God's love in your life. So I have a proposal for you. What if this year you made it your goal to name 1,000 things that you're grateful for? You can just, go old school. Get like one of those yellow pads, right? Start writing it down. Just open up the Notes app on your phone and just start. You can number it down. And maybe let's break it down even simpler, right? What if your goal was actually to get to 63 things by January 21st? Because here's what I know. If you take the time to name 3 things you're grateful for 21 days, you'll have built the momentum you need to get all the way to 1,000. And what will happen is it will totally change you from the inside. It will open you up in ways you didn't see before. And things that you blew right past, whether it's something somebody said, or it's a small moment of beauty, a flower somewhere, things everywhere that you just walk right past, you don't see, all of a sudden the world will explode and you'll be able to see God's love and God's presence and God's provision everywhere you go. I was recently reading an article and it was talking about, we've got this telescope that we were able to hang out in space. I'm gonna butcher the name, so I'm not gonna say it because I also know there's actual rocket scientists in the room. But what was fascinating is we send this telescope out into space, we're getting pictures, we're bringing them back, and it confirmed that the universe is expanding. Well, what's fascinating is that it's expanding faster than we could have predicted. And to me, it's like the universe is trying to tell us that if we really believe that God is everywhere, that there's nowhere I can go that I can escape his presence. And that if God is love, then it's like the universe is just trying to expand to take in that love. And Jesus says something interesting. He says, your eye is like the lamp of your body. If your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And if the darkness that is, if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And what Jesus is saying is, when we see the world as devoid of God's love, as devoid of God's provision, when all we hear are all the voices that tell us how we're not enough and we won't ever measure up, that darkness just comes inside and it feels overwhelming. But when we respond with humility and gratitude and faithfulness, it opens us up to see there's a different story. Ecclesia, may we be the people who choose a life of gratitude, choose a life of humility, and may it open you up in ways that you didn't think were possible.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you would like more information, please visit our website at www.ecclesiahouston.org.